Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And sometimes it's the events. Driven, spirited, and diverse voices are making up the 2022 Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, an event that has elevated the stories of women and others often heard of or unseen through film for 35 years. On November 11th through the 13th, the longest-running women's film festival in North America will be hosting the 35th annual Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, once again with films that make us laugh, cry, question stereotypes, and perspectives. And joining us this morning to talk more about it, we're so pleased to have with us Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, Linda Broker. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're also going to be joined a little later on. I'm not sure if they're on the line yet, but we want to make sure our listeners know they're coming up. Rosemary Rockliffe, who's a filmmaker who is screening, The Great 14th at the festival. And also Mae Thornton Mara, a filmmaker who's screening Being Michelle at the festival. It's Halloween. That's why I'm saying screaming, I guess, so much. Let's start with Linda. Linda, let's give some background on the Rocky Mountain Women's Film. What is the mission? What is the purpose?
Well, the purpose of the organization is to really create community around film by elevating the voices of women and others who are often unheard or unseen. The mission of the festival is a little bit more narrow, and that focuses specifically on celebrating the drive, spirit, and diversity of women.
And when we talk about film elevating women's voices, certainly when I use the word scream, I mean, it was unintentional, but there may have been times when even women screaming at the top of their lungs didn't get the attention that their message deserved. How does film elevate women's voices and messages, and what's so unique about this platform?
Well, it's interesting. While I said that, you know, the festival itself focuses on films really by and about women, the subjects that are covered in the films, and we do show primarily documentaries, although there are some narrative shorts sprinkled in, the films really cover the gamut as far as subjects and topics. So there's really a great diversity of stories mixed in. But as far as elevating the voices of women, I do think we have a lot of films that are really, that highlight extraordinary women in history, present day, women that are inspiring, that folks might not otherwise ever hear of.
That's right. And like you said, these are films by women, about women, but they're for everyone. How do you source the films that you choose for the festival? I mean, where do you find these amazing films?
Great question. So we have a variety of sources. Of course, people can submit their film for consideration. So we have a number of films that come to us just by sort of a submission process. But we also do a tremendous amount of research, both looking at films that are screening at other festivals, films from past filmmakers, distributors that we have longstanding relationships with. So it really is we do a lot of research, and then we invite the films that we think would be a good fit to be considered for programming. And we end up with usually between 350 and 400 films that we ultimately narrow down to this year, the 41 films that we'll be screening at the festival.
Okay, so it ends up with 41 films that people in the Pikes Peak region would have the opportunity to see. And this has been going on for some 35 years, so I'm guessing the process has changed considerably over the years. But let's talk about any standouts that you could pick among this crop.
Well, I'm always hesitant to name any favorites, but I will say that over the years, we know that people who attend the festival love the opportunity to not only meet the filmmakers that have made the films, but also the subjects that are portrayed in the films. So we have a number of films this year that have subjects attending, including a woman who's flying in from Serbia to represent the film The Flag Makers. So we're very excited about that. But we also... again, we have a number of subjects attending. The founders of a bar that's featured in the film Art and Pep, Both Art and Pep are going to be attending the filmmaker, and that's our attending the festival, and that is our Saturday night feature film.
And
so that always adds a tremendous element to the festival.
I bet, to be able to see the subjects, yes, and to be able to find out, you know, how they came across their insights. What does it cost to attend the festival? I mean, are there different price points for seeing different types of films? And where can you see these films?
Well, we have a variety of passes. So there's really something for everybody. You can get a day pass for $55. You can get a full festival pass for $140. And you can actually, during the weekend of the festival, you can buy tickets for individual films for $15. Those are only available, though, right before the film is going to screen. Pass holders have priority. And if you're not interested in attending the festival in person, we have a virtual encore that's going to take place November 17th to the 20th, where people will be able to watch the films online.
I like that option because,
option.
Yeah, in the past, you know, there may be films that you weren't tuned in enough to say, I want to make a point to go see this, or maybe you have a conflict in scheduling. So that gives people a chance to really delve into this. What would you say to someone who's maybe a newbie to this film festival? What kind of guidance would you provide?
I guess I would encourage people to check it out. I don't know that... you know, you necessarily have to be a huge film person to enjoy this festival. It's really for anyone who is curious at all about what's going on in the world around us. You learn so much and in such an enjoyable environment. I really feel like at the end of the weekend, whether you've watched just a couple of films or whether you've started Friday night and continued all the way through the end of the day on Sunday, you really feel like you've had an incredible community experience.
Well, fantastic. Now, listeners can go to find out more information about the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. Where, Linda?
All the information is on our website, rmwfilm.org.
Easy enough. Stick around, Linda, if that's okay, because we'll talk to you a little bit later on at the as we get closer to the end of this hour-long conversation. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Rosemary Rockliffe, one of the filmmakers who is going to be screening her film, which is called The Great 14th. And when we're talking about that, it is the Dalai Lama. We'll tell you about that and more when The Extra returns. We're back with The Extra, and today we're focusing on Rocky Mountain Women's Film and the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival that's coming up the second weekend of November is when it starts. Let's bring into the conversation Rosemary Rockliffe, a filmmaker who is screening The Great 14th at the film. Tell listeners about this film, which is going to be screening on Sunday, November 13th at 11 a.m., Rosemary.
Good morning, and thanks for inviting me. The Great 14th is a film about the 14th Dalai Lama, and it's really the only, what do you call it, oral autobiography. So it's him telling his own story, top to bottom.
So what drew you to film, and how did you know, and when did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker?
In England, you could probably tell I'm not from America.
Guess that, yes.
So before I came here, I had a long career in theatre, television, BBC television, independent television, and my own production company in London. When I came here, I was not going to make any more films, actually. And then I collided with the Tibetans. As a long-time student of Tibetan Buddhism, and I discovered that there were lots of stories untold about Tibetan women who really have a great influence on the cultural aspect of Tibet. And so I started exploring that, and in that process, discovered that there was a really wonderful story to tell about the Dalai Lama and his mother. And then it became a trilogy about the second film was about three generations of Tibetan women who were in the 1959 uprising, escaped, came to India, northern India, and other parts of the world, but mostly those women who escaped and rebuilt the community in exile, and their daughters. So it's the second film is about three generations of Tibetan women.
So where does The Great 14th fit into this? Is it the final film in the trilogy?
No, I wish. No, I was partway through making the third film of the Tibetan women's trilogy, which is called The Sacred Marriage. Well, actually, it's called The Buddha's Wife, but it's about the sacred marriage for all of us. And in the middle of that, his family asked if I would consider making a film about him, because traditionally I make films about women, basically, from our perspective, whether they're men or women. Anyway, they asked me, and we tossed around the idea of whether to make a film, because they wanted me to make a narrative feature film. And so eventually I agreed, and I spent a lot of time with him doing research for the screenplay, and then discovered 2 or 3 years later that it was very difficult because of the Chinese impact on funding for such films about him.
Because of the political policies in place, yes.
Yeah, very difficult, challenging subject, actually. But I decided to use all the footage and the interviews that I've done with him over the years, because I interviewed him 20-some years ago for the first of the Tibetan women's films about he and his mother. And we had a very good relationship. And so basically it progressed from there, and I decided to use the footage from all my interviews to construct The Great 14th, which is the film that exists now. The feature film has not gone away. We're still working on it, but that was put on hiatus and a back burner for a while. And then, of course, the pandemic slowed everything down for the last 2.5 years. So,
right. Huge impact there. I mean, when it comes to this, it sounds like really stories with family at their heart. Kind of sound like the kind of stories that you like to tell.
I do. That's really an interesting observation. I like to tell stories that inspire people, all of us, to be better than we are, you know. And people have asked me about His Holiness and why I made the film about him, because I'm known for making films about women or the like, you know. And someone asked me why him. And I basically said, I love all of who we are, everyone, who we are. I love our potential. And basically, he embodies the best in us. You know, he really is a role model, whether you're a man or a woman. It just is his rugged commitment. I mean, he's never faltered in his love and compassion for everyone, watching him closely.
And certainly listeners who may want to find out more can watch this movie and do so. Again, it's screening on November 13th at 11 a.m. as part of the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. Let's talk about your career. I mean, over the years, I assume you've attended many festivals, and you know, how many of your films have been screened at festivals like this?
The only ones I've made in America, they've all been screened at festivals from, and I'm pretty selective about, I know this sounds awful probably, but I don't go to a lot of festivals. I go to the ones I love. There are festivals and festivals, and Rocky Mountain is one of my favorites. I came with The Great Mother and A Quiet Revolution, the two previous films. And I love being there, you know. It's how can I describe? I find that the films are that have been selected, it's an intelligent, what can I say? It's an intelligent film festival. There's something, it's a broad range, and it's a really interesting place to see a lot of different films, no matter who you are. And I love being part of that.
Well, you
it's always inspirational.
You kind of touch right there on why the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival has a special place in your heart. That maybe in our, we have about a minute before we need to go to break, a minute or two. Can you tell us one thing you love about the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, and then one insight about the Dalai Lama that you think filmgoers will get from your film?
First, in terms of the film festival, the thing I really love and that astonished me the first time I came was their community outreach. For filmmakers who come to the festival, they bring us into the community for special screenings to answer Q&A sessions for people who can't make it to the film festival. I think that really stole my heart because, the first one I did was with the high school children, and the questions from these kids were wonderful. It was a great experience, and it also told me, in particular, how much making film changes people's lives. If you make a good film, it changes people's lives, you know? And these kids were changed by the films that they were shown by the Women's Film Festival. And I can only take my hat off and do a deep bow to Linda for organizing this every year in and out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as an insight, one insight of His Holiness, the first time I interviewed him was about women. And he laughed and he said, I'm a monk. I don't have women in my, you know, I'm in the center of a universe of men, monks. And I challenged him and said, yeah, but you have a strong mother. You have phenomenal sister-in-laws. You have extraordinary sisters. And I pointed out all the women, and he hadn't actually thought about that. And I said, and you know, obviously, Your Holiness, you couldn't get here without a woman.
True.
So he was kind of startled by that. We may be half the planet was women, but we give birth to the whole planet. And he didn't quite get that, you know. But every time I saw him after that, in public, and in his talks after that, he talked about his mother and women. And the important role of women.
Interesting. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And eventually he told me in one interview that Western women will save the world. I don't know what job we're doing, but we do our best.
From his lips, right? All right. Thank you, Rosemary Rockliffe, one of the featured filmmakers who's going to be screening The Great 14th at the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. So good to talk to you. I'm sorry we're out of time right now. We need to go to the break. We've got news, traffic, and weather coming your way. And keep on listening for more of The Extra after this. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you to the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And it was so good to talk with Rosemary Rockliffe, filmmaker, who is going to be screening The Great 14th at the festival, the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. And that is about the Dalai Lama. And so if you'd like to find out more, do attend that screening where Rosemary will be in attendance on November 13th at 11 a.m. Now joining us on the KRDO Newsline, we're pleased to have with us Mae Thornton Mara, filmmaker who's screaming Being Michelle is the name of that title. And good morning, Mae.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine. Just fine. Now, Being Michelle, the film is going to be screening Saturday, November 12th at 11:10 a.m. and also at 2:45 p.m. at the festival. We want to let people know about that. Tell us about Being Michelle.
So So Being Michelle is an award-winning feature-length documentary film about a woman with a deaf woman with autism who survived incarceration and abuse, and she now uses her artwork to depict the trauma she survived and heal from her past. My husband and director of the film, Atin Mehra, first met Michelle about 5 years ago, and as we began to learn her story and experience growing up in North Central Florida, we knew how important it was to work with Michelle and share her story with the world. When we first started this film, we had no idea that we had fallen on one woman's story that so powerfully exemplifies the experience of thousands of people in the criminal justice system. And a statistic I have here from a report by Respectability states that more than an estimated 750,000 incarcerated individuals have a disability. Additionally, an estimated 153,000 deaf individuals are incarcerated in jails or state and federal prisons.
Was her disability, was it recognized when she went in, or was it something that unfortunately she wasn't given the proper resources for when she was incarcerated?
Sadly, she never received the proper resources. And even though to most of us, we would think that providing an interpreter to a deaf person who is interacting with the criminal justice system is just that should happen and should be happening. And it's shocking to know that it isn't happening. And then you have someone like Michelle who is deaf and has autism. So there are people who are deaf with additional disabilities. And she never received the basic human right to communication that she deserved.
A powerful narrative and a documentary style film, not style, a documentary film that really shows you the facts in this case. Why do you like documentary filmmaking?
Documentary filmmaking, especially independent documentary filmmaking, is incredibly challenging work. It is also incredibly rewarding work. And my husband and I first began collaborating on documentary films together in 2009 while working on another project titled Her Song that is still in production and we are still working on. We met Michelle, like I said, about 5 years ago, and this is our first completed feature-length documentary film. But ultimately, we do this work because we truly believe in the power of story to inspire hearts, educate minds, and catalyze change in our society. And we really believe that Michelle's story is going to help change the way deaf and disabled people are treated in our criminal justice system.
Yeah, and I get the sense that this has become more than just a film. It has become something that might have that impetus to bring about change. What sort of activities and initiatives have been inspired by the film so far, May?
So we have pulled together an incredible team of deaf and hearing advocates. If you go to our team page on our website, you can read more about these amazing human beings behind Being Michelle. We're also joined by partner organizations. In April 2022, we collaborated with Respectability and Cleveland International Film Festival to host a live panel discussion with an all-deaf panel to discuss issues raised in the film. Our entire team continues to find ways to support Michelle towards establishing her own independence in life. We are also working with editors of the first ever compilation of research on this population entitled Deaf People in the Criminal Justice System. They published a very important book in 2021, and we're working with them to create supplemental educational materials for the film. Very exciting is that we're in the process of planning our first regional impact screening event, probably in the spring in Seattle, and we want to replicate this around the country with proper funding and support. But we want to bring together community organizations, judges, lawyers, police, guards, lawmakers, interpreters, and advocates across fields to discuss these issues and continue to build community to bring about these changes.
And if our listeners want to find out more, there is a website called beingmichelle.com. Very easy. Michelle is spelled the way I spell it, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, in case you're looking for it. Now, there's something also that you've, founded called, it's an organization called Thriving Roots Initiative. What is its purpose?
So in our it's now been, over 15 years that we've been working on our first film that's still in production, Her Song. And after about, 8 or 9 years, I thought, there's got to be a better way for us to fund and support these films and these communities and these issues. And so my husband and I together founded Thriving Roots Initiative, and we received 501c3 status on the organization in 2020. and we're kind of still in the process of formally launching it alongside Bean Michelle.
Oh, okay. That's a great way of looking at maybe a different power dynamic when it comes to how to get these movies made. Why is it critical for organizations like Rocky Mountain Women's Film to build a community around these compelling stories shared via film?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the filmmakers and their teams do the heavy lifting of bringing transformational stories to a format that can be shared in community. And without organizations like Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival to initially connect these stories to audiences, you know, we're just left out on a limb. So these stories being told, and you know, the change that can happen, and the inspiration that can happen in community, happens at places like Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. So we're so grateful for all that they do.
All right. So we spoke a little bit about your ongoing film project, not just being Michelle, but what about any other current film projects you have going on?
Yep. So we have three other projects we're currently working on. The first, as I mentioned, is Her Song, and it takes a look at caste-based prostitution in central India. The second is Seize the Day, and it follows Tara Williams, a Black woman with epilepsy from South Carolina, who seeks the medical attention she deserves. And the third is called Eternal Firekeepers, A Portrait from Within. And we're working in collaboration with the Dome community of Varanasi, who fulfill their caste trade by burning bodies along the Ganges River in India.
Some very heavy topics, and but it doesn't sound like you shy away from the seriousness of a topic. Just feel that your story, the stories that you're bringing to the audiences, have importance enough that they should be seen and heard and really absorbed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, we're really driven by the human capacity to endure and heal, and I feel that these stories that show you know, that show fellow human beings healing through traumatic events or you know, persevering through difficulty in life, they're truly inspiring, and we have so much to learn from each other. And there are so many ways that we can uplift one another. So that's really what drives us in our filmmaking.
Well, Mae Thornton Mara, filmmaker, thank you for joining us to talk about the film that's being screened at the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, Being Michelle. The airtimes for that are November 12th at 11:10 a.m. That's a Saturday morning. And also a little later on that day at 2:45 p.m. And you'll be in attendance, Mae?
Yes, I will. And I'll be there along with two of my other teammates, Dr. Mae Kennedy and Deb Guthman. So please join us for the film and two powerful question and answer sessions following the film. And I want to please ask everyone to sign up for our newsletter on our website and help us demand the basic human right to communication for deaf disabled people in the criminal justice system.
And we can find that at beingmichelle.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break here. And again, if you would like to find out more about the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, there's a website for that as well, rmwfilm.org. We need to take a short break. When we come back, more of the FAQs. We're back with the extra, ready to wrap up with our final segment here, talking about the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. And I hope our listeners, as I did, got very excited hearing about some of the creative visionaries who are going to be presenting their work in such powerful work. It sounds like the Great 14th being promoted by Rosemary Rawcliffe, the filmmaker, who will be screening that again. That date for that airing is going to be on November 13th at 11 a.m. And then we were so glad to hear from Mae Thornton Mara, a filmmaker who's screening Being Michelle. It'll be screened at two times on Saturday, November 12th. And there will also be, as she said, a Q&A section afterward. Linda Broker, who's the executive director of the Rocky Mountain Women's Film. Tell us what you think, beyond what we just heard from those filmmakers. What can filmgoers expect when they attend the 35th annual Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival?
Well, I mean, a fabulous weekend of films. You've got a little sample hearing from both of those filmmakers, but you know, there's 39 other films that are equally engaging. And I would encourage people to try. This is, you know, the festival itself is really one of the cultural treasures of Colorado Springs. And I have never encouraged someone to come, had them attend, and ever turn around and say, yeah, that wasn't really for me. For the most part, people say, I can't believe I waited so long to start attending this event. So it really is, it is a fabulous weekend. Again, whether you just dip in for a few films or you go start to finish, I recommend start to finish. But, you know, if you're not ready to dive into the deep end, buy yourself a Flex 5 pass, which will give you access to 5 films anytime during the weekend.
Oh, I like that option. And like you said, there are a number of different options that are available, and we'd recommend people go to your website to find out more. And certainly when you listen to both Rosemary and May talk about their experiences making these films, I mean, these are multi-year investments of their work, of their time, of their effort. And then the end result is this story, a very powerful story, both of them that are presenting in the documentary category, where they are telling something that may be a catalyst for change, or that may open someone's eyes to a subject that they didn't know about. So it's not just for women, right? I mean, this is a film festival where films are for everyone.
Absolutely. And I would encourage, like I said, people who haven't attended, I would encourage them to attend. And I would certainly not say anyone should hesitate because they think it is an event for women. It definitely is not, and I would say anyone attending will feel welcome and not like they are, let's say, for example, the only man. We have a big diversity of people that attend the festival. It is definitely not just for women.
Well, and some of these messages, some of these story narratives really probably need to be heard by all people, not just women. Men and women both can benefit from it.
Everybody benefits.
Mm-hmm. Again, we want to point people to the rmwfilm.org website. That's where you can go to find out more. In our final minute here, Linda Broker, who's the executive director, what would you like listeners to hear beyond the, if you haven't tried it, you should try it? What else would you like people to know?
I guess I would just reemphasize something that, and I can't remember if it was Rosemary or May, that they mentioned, that I think it was May, about the value of an event like Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, that filmmakers dedicate an incredible amount of time and resources to bringing these stories to the general public. And they often, again, without a platform like Rocky Mountain Women's Film, those stories often don't get elevated to where other people are able to learn and hear about them. So I'm very proud of the fact that we do provide this platform and that we bring a lot of filmmakers to the festival, giving them the opportunity to, you know, actually see an audience react to their film. They work so much in isolation that it's very rewarding to see how happy they are to see a live audience react to their film.
Yeah, it's the way it's designed to be viewed, is in a theater where you can have those visceral reactions, which are shared by others. I mean, that's something that I noticed watching so much during the pandemic at home, is that you lacked that kind of crowd reaction that really can make something even that more powerful. Well, Linda,
it is much better.
Yes, Linda Broker, so exciting to talk to you about the 35th annual Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival coming your way to the Pikes Peak region. Do check them out at rmwfilm.org. Linda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And to our other guests, of course, Rosemary Rockliffe and May Thornton-Mara, thanks as well. And if you would like to find out more, check out the website. Do look into the various tickets options that you have, as well as the option to attend at the last minute. If you haven't been able to make those plans, you can definitely attend at the last minute if you check out their website for any of those still available tickets. You've been listening to The Extra, talking about the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival. Thanks so much for listening. You have a good day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.